You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Nancy Calverley, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. This interview was originally recorded on July 28th, 2020. So to start with, could you introduce yourself for listeners?
Yes, I will. Good morning, listeners. My name is Nancy Calverley. All you want to know about me? Well, there's nothing much. I've never gone down in the book of whatever as to go into. Well, I've been here for 3 years, and it's very, very nice. I like it very much. I like the privacy of my own room. I try to make it more homely and comfy as I can, because after all, this is my home now. To add to that about the weather, it's not been too bad. And I've got a very nice window. It's a corner window and it's got three parts to it. And it's very, very nice. I've got a nice tree. It's a pear tree. Oh. And we don't grow pears on it. It's only ornamental. But it gives a lovely blossom. So I'm very fortunate with where I am. I love the staff. They're good. Very good. And I figure I'm going on 90. So I figure that I've done very well. Had a few bad bumps along the road, but you know, you do the best you can no matter what. And so I'm enjoying life. I like myself. I do. I'm comfortable with myself. So that's a good something you've attained. I've attained in life. I'm very comfortable with myself. I'm not vain. I'm just comfortable with myself. So I understand that this is a program that's going on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, the radio. So this young lady, maybe she's got some questions for me.
Well, first of all, I'm very inspired by you saying you're comfortable with yourself. I think that's a really wonderful sentiment. I'm glad you shared that, because it does feel important. It feels important to kind of get there as soon as possible, really. But I think some people maybe go a whole lifetime still struggling with that feeling, you know?
Yes. God bless them.
Have you always felt comfortable, or is that something that you kind of earned after a period of time?
I think it's something I've earned. I would say that for sure. I think it's something that I've earned. And going on 90 years old, maybe not now, but I'll soon be 90. It's a good feeling. It's a very good, it's okay, I'm happy. And for those left behind, I'll say bye, I'll see you on the other side. So, yes. So how about this place? I really like it. I like staff, and I like, right now we've been shut in for so long.
Yeah.
It's very depressing, really. Although I'm not a person who's depressed easily. I did say I like myself. Well, that includes not being depressed. I don't allow that. I've got all sorts of things here. I like coloring, and I like this Scrabble thing I've got here. It's Bible questions, I think. References. I like the Bible. It's very interesting book, good stories in it. And I feel happy and close to my Father in heaven when I'm reading the Bible and thinking of my Father in heaven and thinking of the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, this planet, they made this planet. That's almost inconceivable, isn't it? And it's just, how can you process that in your mind? But it's true. And they've done a wonderful job. The television's very good at taking you on journeys. And I do like that, learning about other countries and learning about people, cultures, races. This is a very good time for me to learn that. I don't know, as I look back as a child, that I really like, I liked geography, but I don't know if I liked history. But anyway, I like a lot of good shows on television. No trash. Don't waste my money on that. But it's a good entertainment, and I'm happy that I have it. Whoever brought about a television, I believe there's to be a program on the person that designed a first television. Hmm. So I'm very grateful to that person. I think it was a man. So this is a lovely day. I've been looking forward to this lady coming and being together. And I don't see her anywhere, for goodness sake. I'm looking. She's me? Disappeared.
Me?
She's there.
I'm on the screen.
Oh, you're on the screen, but you're not in the room.
Right. Well, I'm in the room on the screen.
Oh, that's how it goes.
Yeah. I know. I kind of like when you're talking about how the TV has been kind of allowing you to be different places. That's sort of like this technology, too, which is pretty neat.
Oh, wonderful journeys. Places that I'll never be able to get there. Physically, I'm not able. I've had some nasty things happen to me, and you don't want to hear about that. But it causes me to be very careful. I can use the walker, take it slowly, and I can even use my scooter if we're allowed to that day. Right now, we're in our room.
Yeah.
We're isolated. So it's been a long time. And the staff, I don't know how they do it, you know, because it needs a tremendous amount of work for them, carrying trays back and forth and back and forth. Mm-hmm. But they do it well. They do it well. So I figure, as I say, I'm very comfortable with myself. You can't ask for anything more at this age. Really, you can't ask for anything more than that. I've got lots of memories from childhood right on. I was born in Scotland in a place called Toll Cross. It's on the edge of Glasgow. It's called the Toll Cross because in days gone by, they had to pay a toll to get into the city. So the place where I lived was just on the very edge where the toll was passed. And I've got lots of memories of that. And then when the war was over and my six brothers came home safe.
Wow.
Thank you. And of course, we had to move to a bit bigger place because during the war, they didn't build any houses. They didn't have time. It was all guns and armor that they were building. So I moved to closer to Paisley, if anybody knows Paisley. It's very nice town, city. And I was married in Paisley. And I don't have any pictures of myself. I should get my boys. I have two boys and two girls. Wonderful children. Never given me any cause for sadness or pain. They're very good kids, and I'm not being vain when I say that. They're very good to me. They're anything I want. they'll bring. And always there's a lots of nice surprises in there. I think I'm putting weight on. But oh well, at this age, who cares? So,
can you share some of your stories from Scotland? Some of the things you remember from when you were a kid?
Oh, yes. Well, the big thing I remember from there was during the war. At the start of the war, 1939 to 1945, it was 6 years. And my memories are at the start of the war, 39, we were all hustled onto a train and given a mask and given a little bag of food. We were put on these trains. We had no idea where we were going. But we were on the train for a wee while. And then we stopped and landed in a place called Lockerbie. Lockerbie's got a bit of famous to it. It was there that big American plane was brought down with all those passengers. Just right there in the edge. It killed a lot of people there in Lockerbie too. So it was an American plane, so a lot of Americans were hit by that. It was sad, very, very sad. So I had very good foster parents. They were very, very smart people. They were lawyers. And Mrs. Cormack was a at-home lady. She was very involved socially in all sorts of things. So I had a lot of nice years there. And then I began to get homesick. I was about 3 years, but then I began to get homesick. And I wrote my mom, I'll do the dishes, I'll wash the floors, I'll do anything if you just let me come home. So I got home. Aww. And then I had to start school again with a whole bunch of new kids and lessons were different. I had to start in where they had were using. So that was a whole phase of my life. Good memories. And when I see television, they show a lot of countryside. And that reminds me of Lockerbie, very much so. So there's a wee story I have to tell you about that. We had a maid. This is during the war. Mm-hmm. We had a maid, and she had beautiful long hair. And so one day, she was so upset. There were three levels to this house. And I was up there doing something in my room. And she was so disturbed. My heart went out to her. I was just a kid. I mean, I was 8 years old. So I asked her what was wrong. She said, oh, I've lost my brush. And she had long stresses. You'd never get another brush during wartime. And too busy making guns and armor. But anyway, I said, what happened? And she says, look. And she took me to the window and looked down the gutter. And on the gutter there was the brush. So I was a very unafraid giving child. I said, well, if you hold my legs, I'll lean over. Remember, this is three stories high.
Yeah.
And the roof was right over. It wasn't flat. It was all the top roof leading to the gutter. So she said she had lost it and showed me where it was. I said, well, if you hold my legs, I can lean over there and I can get it. No fear, just wanted to help. And so she did. And I finally got, and here are my three stories high, leaning over on this roof, and I got the brush.
That's awesome.
Anyway, the lady across the street, or not the street, but the town, she had a bakery on the other side, and she saw all this going on. And so she called my foster mother, and she came up the stairs nearly having a heart attack. God bless her. And the maid, they were hard to get, but she got a telling off for doing that. I could have been killed. I would have been mashed by the time I fell those three floors. Anyway, they didn't. And I guess I had faith enough to know that I could do it. So that was one incident. And they were very nice people. I really did like them. And it was nice to get home, but it was hard to start their schooling when I went back home again. And my dad, he was a French polisher, and he made this suitcase of wood. Can you imagine? It was a suitcase out of wood. And I had to take this walk to school with my books and everything in it back. And oh, I didn't like to say it was no good, but my father could see with the books and that in it that it was far too much. So that was good to get rid of the suitcase made of wood. And I had one sister. There's 10 years between us, so we never had that real closeness of sister to sister. Her world was a different world from mine, with the difference in age. So the war was over now, 39 to 45, 6 years. And so we had to move because our boys were all coming back from the forces. So they gave us a bigger home, much bigger home. You never owned your own home in those days. It was corporation. Everybody naturally, you lived that way. And so we were given a lovely home, but it was away in Paisley, if anybody knows Paisley. Well, it was there that I met my husband, and my first husband. He died, heart problem. And we go into Paisley for everything, because that was closer than taking the bus or the tram all the way into Glasgow. I worked for Johnson & Johnson. They were good people. And it was funny because in my genealogy, I've got so many Johnsons, just the way Johnson & Johnson is done, written.
What was your position there? What did you do?
We served with medical equipment and things that they needed in hospital, and bandages and all sorts of things like that. And so one day they brought this gentleman in, and so he had a little chat with me, and how are you doing, and how'd you like your work, and are you busy, all this. So that's fine. He was very pleasant. We had a wee chat and he left. But then my boss came in. And I thought, oh dear, why am I being called into the office? Well, apparently this man wanted me to hire me for, I guess it was the office in the city. It was something that was going to be pretty difficult to get back and forth on buses and whatever. They hadn't taken that into consideration when they asked me to do that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go there, I stayed. I met my husband. He was the local butcher. And so it was funny because his mother, we had no refrigeration in those days. Mm-hmm. And his mother and I used to meet going for our groceries or a meet every day. So she told me all about her son. He was in the Navy. He was a sailor. And he was coming home, and he was a butcher, and blah, 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 blah. So when I went into the store, the butcher store, here was this guy. I thought, oh, that must be that woman's son. And so I can't remember how we got. I knew his mother very well. And it was New Year. That's what it was. It was New Year. And I went around, what you do in the old country, visit your friends. And he was there, the son, the butcher. So he walked me home, I think it was. I lived at the top of the hill. He lived at the bottom of the hill. So I don't remember how it flourished, that flourished. But anyway, in the end of the story, we got married. And then I suggested, there's nowhere we can go because there's no building homes during 6 years of war. So if you got a room with your mother or your mother-in-law or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I did. I got a room with my mother-in-law. It was only a very small room. And my mother could offer me a great big, big room. And I thought, well, we've got to grab that. But, you know, they didn't like that. That's it. Short story. They didn't like that moving because that was bad looking on them. But can you imagine? So anyway, I left and I went up to my mother's and I got a good room up there. That's where my son was born. Not in the house, I went to the hospital. And had a little boy, my first one, Tom. The best son you ever could have. Oh my goodness. Oh, I have very good children. God be thankful for that. So stayed there for a while. I had one at that time. And then when I was pregnant, we had to think of doing something. So we went along to say goodbye to this very good customer. And she'd become a friend, really. And so what I was interested in, she was coming to Canada, and I thought, you know, the house that she lives in, it'll be vacant, and I can get it. So we went along, summer evening, baby in the pram, and away we go. And we get to the little house, it's the gatehouse. It's a wee house just at the gate, allowed people to go in and out. So anyway, we got in there and we started talking. And the lady, it was a really nice person. And she wanted to show me some newspapers. And I thought, I don't really want to look at newspapers. I didn't say that. I took them and I looked. And I got to the sheet where it was rent a room or rent a house or rent the... This is a bit, and I thought, there's a place in this world that I can get a place to stay. I was amazed. So on the way home, I told Tom, I said, oh, we've got to get away because this is ridiculous. We have one and we have another one on the way. We've got to do something. So I wrote to an aunt in Canada. She had left the First World War, came to Canada. And so we got a place to stay. I was having problems with bleeding. That stupid doctor, he didn't know his stuff at all. And of course, the first night that I was with my husband, we hadn't seen each other for a long time. And when we had sex, it was blood, it was bleeding. So my aunt didn't know anything about anything. So went to the doctors. Now the doctor at that point must have known what was happening. On the story, I had a placenta previa. Oh. And the baby I lost. And I lost a lot of blood. And you had to pay for blood in those days. Oh. You didn't get it free. You had to pay for it. And here we were, we just landed in the country. Where were we going to get money to pay for blood? And the social services were pretty heartless in those days. They were new and pretty heartless. So anyway, we did get, went back to that room, lost the baby. My husband said, there's no good job here in Welland. I'm going into Toronto. Now, he had an aunt in Toronto. And so he went in there to get established. And then I went through, stayed with Aunt Eileen. She was a darling for just a very short time. Got a place of her own. And so we stayed there for a long, long time. And Eileen was so nice. She was a darling. I loved her so much. That's the first place that I tasted corn on the cob. When I saw her boiling this stuff, I never seen a corn cob before in my life.
That's funny.
It's like seeing an elephant for the first time. I couldn't believe to eat that stuff. Oh my gosh, you know. You try it, she said. It's really delicious. So she brought this butter, pound of butter, and she showed me how to roll it and get this saturated in the butter. And the first, that was the first time I had corn on the cob. And then from Aunt Eileen, we went to, where did we go then? Well, that's it. I was looking in the papers, and there's the positions, different positions. It was like summertime. They needed help in the cottages and that sort of thing. So long story short, I applied, got this place in the cottage country. And I had a room, and I could have my son with me.
Oh, good.
So we went there, and you just did everything from changing the rooms when they left, the people left. And now, the people there took a great liking to my son. So they would take him everywhere they went, so I didn't have to worry about Tom. So then I saved, with that money and tips, I saved $500, which was incredible. Incredible. And with my husband, anyway, he managed to get some money too. I forget how. It was legal, I know that. And we put it together and bought our first little house. I passed by and looked at that place, and it was just a shack. But it was our own, you know. It had a big yard. Those days, the houses were that way. They usually had a great big yard, so I had a great big yard. And two bedrooms, lovely big living room, kitchen. And then my husband added a balcony, but a sunroom, you might say, you know, on the house. So we were very okay.
Where was this house that you bought?
That was in the East End.
Of Toronto?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Of Toronto, in East End.
Is that when the two of you got to be back together again? Because he was working separately, right? And you were in cottage country, so you were working apart.
Yes.
To save money. So when you got the house is when you got to live together again, is that right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right. So we had our first little house. The one nasty thing that happened at that time that I remember, my son, I guess he'd be about 8 years old, I sent him across, just across the street to the little store, sold everything, one of those little stores that sells. And so I sent him across because we were going to go buy my new pair of shoes. So I let him go, and the next thing I know, there's a knock on the door. And I look out and I see all these people. And I, oh my, something's happened. So this wee girl is at the door, and she says, that wee boy is your little boy. And she described his jacket. But I couldn't get it. I said, oh, it wouldn't be my little boy, dear. He's just gone to the store to buy something. And so she went away, just a few steps away, and then came back to, Well, I think it is your little big boy, because, and she described what he was wearing and everything. So I realized it is. So I down those stairs and across the street. And not, it was close. It was just at the bottom of the house. And here he is lying on the ground. Death itself. I couldn't believe it. So I wasn't afraid. I had this thing within me and I wasn't afraid. So I just followed this little thing in my heart and my soul, whatever. So I got down beside him and I took his head in my arms and I start shouting, Tommy, rocking back and forth like a mother would do a baby. Tommy, Tommy. And I kept that up. And I wasn't going to give it up, although people were saying, oh, it's useless. Sort of, and I go, but sure enough, I go, took a big gulp of air. So then they got the ambulance to come. They had ordered this ambulance. And they went to put it in the ambulance, and he gave such a squeal. Then they realized that his femur was broken. The femur, the biggest bone in your body, cracked. And two, it was a mess. So they got him in the ambulance. I went with him, and they took him to the East General Hospital. So I stayed with him. He had a wee boy beside him. He was a homeless little thing, and nobody ever came to see him, God bless. But I was there every day to see Tom. It's quite a walk, Tommy. And so he was in there for quite a long time. And then when he came out, he had a plaster right all around his waist and the leg. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, we mustn't lose your schooling. So I said, right, and got the teacher to bring me the books that they were using at school. Now, remember, he's in a cast. And so I did his lessons. She let me a wee note, and I did his lessons every day.
Wow.
He passed with flying colors. And anyway, finally, he's out of that.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Nancy Calverley, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence.
What happened to him that day? How did he get hurt?
He was going from where we were, crossing over the street, and this car hit him.
Oh.
And he's down on the ground. And that's where I come into the picture. Yeah. As I see, he just looked like death itself. I don't think about that. You know, you had no idea what a suit was, you know, to sue somebody.
Yeah.
But when I looked back over it and heard the story, I could have made an awful lot of money. I could have made a lot of money, rightfully too. So anyway, he got the cast on. He was on for a long time, had his schooling. I did that. And then we had $500. And we were in the little house at that time, yeah.
So you still only had one child by this point?
And then
is that right?
That I lost.
Then you had the one that you lost. That's right.
Welland at the time.
In Welland, okay.
I went to the bathroom. Well, this I never forget. Went to the bathroom. My husband was playing with Tom on the bed. And my baby, I can feel the movement in my baby. But I need to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. I thought, that's funny. Pee-like, you know, funny. So when I got up, it was just blood, just pure blood right there. Well, they got me to hospital. And you had to pay for the blood.
Yeah.
I can't remember how that went. They had no heart, and those the social side of things. They didn't have any heart.
It's just interesting to hear about that time because, you know, people can survive through that now, but it's still a very serious situation, the placenta previa. Like, I have two children, and so I remember learning about the different things that I needed to be worried about, and just imagining at that time having to go through that, that sounds really, really intense.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Especially losing the baby.
Yeah.
Andrew. And of course, we had to bury him. He's buried in Welland. We didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So we ended up paying for blood, paying for the doctor, paying for the anesthesiologist, paying for everything associated with that situation. Everything. So I think about people, when I got into nursing myself, I think about people who are, well, can I have this, or could I have that? You know, they come from countries where they never did anything.
Yeah.
But they know the system, and they know how to ask for it. Never even crossed my mind that we had to do that. We just had to pay. That was it. Yes, that's the way it was.
When did you move to Canada?
I moved to Canada in 1951.
Hmm. I want to move back in time a tiny bit. You have the six older brothers who all went to the war, and you had your older sister. Were you the youngest, or like,
maybe.
Is that right? Okay. So were you the only one that was a child during the war?
Well, when we were first taken, there were three boys. Then gradually, this is, we were in the town where we were evacuated to.
Yeah.
So these people were fantastic. They were just, they were very beautiful. He was the lawyer, ran the Bank of Scotland. Very educated. Above us, you might say. And I don't, I'm telling you, just a status.
Yeah, yeah.
Above us that way, you know. So, of course, we're in Lockerbie for about 3 years. Then I got homesick. I had to get home.
Yeah, was it pretty common for the children to be sent to foster families during that time? Is it just because...
The whole school.
Right.
We gathered, the school gathered, we'd have gas masks and food, a ration of food. It was the very well-known corned beef stuff. And we had to give that to our new parents, our foster parents.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that so many people were separated from their families as children. Oh. I guess, yeah.
I've got a book, it's called The Day the Children.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all the stories, different stories of children that were taken, like I'm describing to you.
Yeah.
Some children were very fortunate. Some, they took those kids and they just treated them like slaves. They just treated them, if it was on a farm especially, they just treated them not very well. Yeah, but we were fortunate that way. In fact, when I look over it, we were way above in status than we ever would have known. You know, I would never have had a room for myself. Beautiful, but...
Yeah.
And Mr. Cormack was a darling too. He was a sweetheart. Then I got homesick after a while and asked to go home. And my daddy was very upset because these people were very up here, you know. And he figured that this was a good thing.
Right.
In fact, I might stay on there even after the war, maybe as a maid or something like this. Mm-hmm. It was not to be. So I got home, went back to school, stayed there till I was 14. That was the leaving age. And the teacher that I had red hair, and the way it was, your work was on the blackboards, big, long blackboards. And you had to do the work up there. When you were finished, you went up and the teacher's in her big chair there. And I got out and I'm first. And the teacher started playing with my hair. She says, Nancy, your hair, I always remember this, your hair is like living gold. My hair is like living gold. Strands of living gold. That's what she said. And I thought, oh, well, that's not so bad, because being a redhead, I thought, oh, gosh, I came from a family of redheads. Mom was lovely redhead. That's her up there. Beautiful red hair. So anyway, that's where I met my husband. I used to walk with the mother, his mother, and she was always short of tea. And she'd ask me if you get any tea to spare. Oh, I said, I'd have to ask my mother, who was in hospital. She had hypothyroidism. Oh. She's very sick. She'd been there for a while. So when I went to visit Mom every day, I told her about this lady, and she said, have we got enough? We can give her a bag, like a, I said, I think so. She says, well, then I'll give it to him. Give it to her then. So I gave it to her, and that's how I got acquainted with my future mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And she told me about her son. He's coming home from the Navy and blah, 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 blah. I go into the store. I see this new guy. I think this is the son, blah, 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 blah. And the head manager of the store could see Tom, my future husband, having eyes for me. So he urged and to talk with him. Anyway, he got talking back and forth, just at the store. And then it was New Year. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Well, we were in a brand new place, a new house. I didn't know where we were, didn't know anything. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to go in to this lady that I knew so well. And I went, my future mother-in-law, went around there. And that's where I met the son, who was to be my future husband.
Yeah.
So long story short, we got married. Yeah. And we only had a room in those days. That was the new beds. That was it. If you could get a room in the house, you're going to get married. And so we did. We got married at a lovely wedding. Very, very nice wedding in Paisley. It was on the border of Glasgow. And so we got married, and we had that room there. And that's when we started. Oh, Tom was telling, my husband, future husband, was telling me about this customer. She's a really lovely lady. And when she knew I was pregnant, she did all this knitting for my baby.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was the connection with that lady. And so we went to, I said, if she's leaving to go to Canada, she must be available. She had the gatehouse, you know, that's the little house before you go up to the big house. And so we went along, and I thought, I'm going to get that little house if she's going to Canada. It'll be available. We took off. It was quite a walk. And the baby. And we would, and then she showed me the newspapers. I was amazed, you know, too late and all this availability. You name it, you could have it. I thought, is there any place in this world? I can't believe this, you know, a place that we can have. So we said to my husband, Tom, I says, we gotta go. We've gotta go somewhere where we've got a place. We can't, we've got one baby, one on the way, one little room.
She was showing you a newspaper from Canada, is that right?
Yeah.
To show you that in Canada you could get any kind of place?
Anything.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe it. I thought, I tell you, could not believe it. I said, well, we're going to Canada. So we came to Canada. Got all the work and tests and whatever. And we came to Canada. I took this job in the summer.
Yeah, working at the cottage.
At the cottage. And saved enough money and put the down payment down on the first little house. Mm-hmm. It was a miserable little place, but it was our own. And I could buy it for $500. I look back now and I could have got it for less, but I didn't know how to trade with buying things, you know, well, yeah. I'll pay this for it and I'll go down, I'll pay that sort of thing. So that was our first little house. And then Tom had that accident. Mm-hmm. He was going across to the little street to the store on the corner and he was hit down by a car mm-hmm. in the gutter. Went out, didn't believe it, but I went out to check and it was him. He was gone. He was just dead. Yeah, his color is just that. I wasn't afraid. I was stiff and stoic and I just lifted in my arm and Tommy rocked him back and forth, gently saying his name, just gently calling Tommy. Tommy, Tommy, I did this for a long time, wouldn't give up. Then all of a sudden, he's there. So that was it. Mm-hmm. Broken his femur, had to get the big cast on. That took teach him at home. And he had to crawl practically with this cast around here, all around, and down the leg. But we got through it. We did terrific at schooling. It was a lot of fun for me, and I think it was for Tom, too. And afterwards, we gave a party. My husband and I gave a party. And we had all sorts of things. And we invited this class. Well, needless to say, we were just inundated with kids, you know. But we made hot dogs and marshmallows, all sorts of stuff for the kids. And boy, it was a party. That was great. He was so proud.
Do you remember when your next baby was on the way?
54.
Okay.
54. 54, and then my son came up. He was 57.
Okay.
So 54, then 57.
Okay.
So we had left there because of that thing that run down with the car. Yeah. And we got a house in, well, I think it was Welland.
Yeah.
Well, one day I'm walking along the street with my son. And there's a lady across the street. And she's, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo. And I thought, couldn't be me. I don't know anybody here. I don't know this lady. Maybe she needs a time or something. What's the matter? So I walked across. She says, I knew you. She spoke and I replied, I knew you were a wee lass from the old country. I just knew it. We became good long friends.
How did you end up in Guelph, where you are now? Were you in Guelph before moving into Riverside Glen?
No. No, no. I before I came here?
Yeah.
No, I was in Kitchener. I had a condo.
Oh, okay.
I had a condo with a nice balcony. So of where we were when we came to that Kitchener, I'm not too sure. I'd have to think about that. I don't really. But I know I had all my children by the time I got that house in Kitchener. Yeah. Yeah, it must have a long time passed by because the kids were... I was on my own at that point. My oldest son, Tom, had got married. Yeah, I think that's it.
But now you're at Riverside Glen.
Yes.
And you seem, I mean, I really feel for you guys right now. It doesn't seem ideal to be, you know, not able to leave your rooms and stuff. But I, from the outside looking in, I feel really grateful that you're safe. You know, that's sort of the part that is comforting. It must be really hard to be going through this right now.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Yeah.
You can't see your family. Of course, you can talk to them on the telephone. But they would come before this outbreak. They would come all the time. once a week. And we go to the Mandarin always. That was our big place. Or Tom was, and Odette, my daughter-in-law, she was terrific at finding places in the country, restaurants in the country. So we found two or three. So when they'd come visit, we'd go there. And there were some very nice little places, really nice little places. And the food was very, very good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was nice. But then this COVID thing hit, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was isolation from then on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so how long that's going to be, I have no idea.
No.
It'd be nice to get back to our old routine and see the people. I had Alan was my mate at the table. There were two people because of the COVID thing. There was government said only two at the table, mm-hmm. with a space between them. And so that's what we were doing when we were told you have to stay in your room. So you're right, it was hard, it's been hard. And we've no idea. They keep saying Thursday and Thursday, but like never comes. Never comes. But they know what they're doing and it's for our safety, so yeah. You can't complain about that.
And what are you most looking forward to when we finally get to get out of isolation? What are you most looking forward to?
Well, I've not been able to use my scooter. And it was relatively new. And I had to learn how to get to the dining room table and get in a position, all that, which wasn't easy. I never drove a car. So when you've never driven a car, driving something like this, the scooter, is not easy. But I just love it. And we did go one time. We could do it then. With the scooter, Tom brought it in the car. You can take it apart some way, but anyway, we got to Hamilton. And Hamilton have got that great big garden. Have you been there?
I think so. Yeah, I think I know where you mean.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's up and down and round, but which was fun for me because I used the scooter. I was having a great time. This was great, you know. And you could just stop and see the name of the plants and the flowers and all the rest, you know. It was lovely.
Well, that sounds beautiful. I bet when you're in a scooter, it's probably the perfect height, too, to see all of the little plaques.
That's
wonderful.
Exactly.
Well, that's a really wonderful thing to look forward to, is getting to go on some more adventures like that.
Yeah, Tom always talks about it when he talks. He says, Mom, won't be long. Things will be better. We'll go to Hamilton.
Aw.
Well, let's hope that's God's will for me.
Yeah.
But at this age, my sister died in 93. My mom was the same. And I'm 90 on my next birthday. So if it follows the course, then I would, after 90, I'd have a couple of years or whatever.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I guess I better let you go, but I enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. It's been very nice.
Well, I'm looking forward to when the quarantine ends because then I can come visit everybody in person.
Yes. And
it's been so nice. I get to make friends with all of these residents in your building, but yes. I haven't met you in real life, you know, and so it's going to be really sweet when I get to come see everybody in person.
Yes. What country do you come from?
I'm from here. I was born in Kingston, Ontario, and I've grew up in Guelph. I moved here when I was like 2 or 3. So I've been in Guelph basically my whole life.
So what country do your parents come from?
My parents also Canada. My grandparents, grandparents, Ireland on one side, Wales on one side, I think somewhere back there, Newfoundland, because Newfoundland was a different country at that point, but pretty far back, I guess, yeah. But I have reddish hair too. I think like you and I probably share some heritage in there.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, people used to admire my hair. They want to touch it as a kid all the time. Carrots, carrots, they call carrots.
I remember a teacher in school telling me that the redheads were considered witches. That was... And I was the most redheaded kid in the class. I didn't have very red hair. When you described that person describing the strands of gold, I think my hair is more gold than red, but it has a bit of red in it. But
this was definitely red. 6 brothers, mother and father, reds, or there was a couple who were ash blonde, beautiful, yeah. Blonde, odd colors, beautiful.
My great-grandmother has red hair, and otherwise no one else. I was the only person that carried a bit of it on.
Oh, it'll come. Yeah. 1 or 2 generations, it'll come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed this so much, and I'm looking forward to you getting to go on more scooter adventures.
Oh, Hamilton.
Yeah.
Magic. Oh.
It will be. Well, I'm going to let you go, I guess, Nancy. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
And we'll see you again.
Yes.
Okay, now, bye.
What's your name again?
Jenny.
Jenny.
Yeah.
We had a lovely Jenny in our family.
Aw.
And my brother married a Jenny. Aww. Everybody loved Jenny. She was a doll. She got young, though. Anyway, we had a memory of her.
Yeah.
We were blessed with that, Jen.
We'll meet again at some point, okay, Nancy?
Okay, dear.
It was such a pleasure. Bye. So once again, that was Nancy Calverley, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.